Today's daf in Masechet Shkalim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Chet, and we're holding right here at the beginning of a Halakha Perek, and it's introduced by our one and only favorite Kapitan. Halacha Aleph, b'shlosha prakim b'shana, tormim et alishka. So as we know, even though we learned out from the Pasuk earlier, the Chodshei HaShana, that there is one time in the year that we take off the money for the entire year, Lamais, as the Gemara said earlier, in the same way that we had a machlokas, whether it's entirely a takona kind of thing, but in any event, the same way that we will do things three times in terms of the pious and other issues to be miragesh, here too, we want people to feel it. And because of that, we do three separate trumas halishka. Now, that's not the same thing, obviously, as the giving of the shekalim. And three times a year, we'll go in there and we'll take out the shekalim from the kupot hagdolot, move them into the three kupot ktanot, and then start taking off the karbonis, purchasing them from those three kupot. When was that? It was b'pros ha-Pesach, b'pros ha-Atzeret, or b'pros ha-Chag. 15 days, we'll talk about the Lashon HaPros in a moment, 15 days before Pesach, 15 days before Shavuos, 15 days before Sukkot, and these are also precisely the gronot of Ma'aser Behema, Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So we have a concept of gronot. Gronot means the times at which we can no longer continue to take advantage of our things and not deal with them. So just like there's a goren for maaser, we continue to eat, it's not exactly the same as we'll see, but just like there is a time of a goren for maaser dagan, and that's the point at which it becomes rotwi to take off the maaser. Until then, only an achilas sarai would be mutter and so on. And there's something vaguely similar when it comes to Ma'aser Behema. Vaguely similar because the truth is b'niraisa. There's no such thing as tevel on a behema. If you don't take off the Ma'aser Behema, there's no iser in eating the animal. But nonetheless, the Rabbanan established the three gronais. And after that time, any animal that you're mechuyev to take Ma'aser becomes midrabbanan osur, as if it's a kind of tevel. You're not allowed to shecht it. You can't sell it. You can't eat it unless you took off the maaser. Fine. So the same time that is the time of taking off the shekalim was also those three times of the year for maaser. That's Rabbi Akiva Shita. Ben Azai Shita is that there are three times for maaser, but they are not the 15th of Nisan and so on. They are the 29th day of Chodesh Adar, the first day of Sivan, which is only 6 days before, and on the 29th day of Av. And then there's yet another shita, which is the shita of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. And they say, you're close, but not close enough. It's not the 29th day of Adar, it's the next day, which is the first day of Nisan. It is the first day of Sivan, and it's on the 29th day of Elul, not the 29th day of Av. Now, if you ask me, why is it that I'm makpid Echad b'Nisan, Echad b'Sivan? I mean, why not just say instead of the 29th of Elul, which is always the day before the first day of Tishrei, why didn't I just say the first day of Tishrei? No, I mean, shouldn't I be consistent? Because Echad b'Tishrei always manages to work out just on Rosh Hashanah. How do you like that? And since you can't take off Ma'aser Behema on Rosh Hashanah, because it's usur to go and to paint the animal, which is also because of Tzoveya. And of course, the other question is, why isn't there Stam is an Isser of being Magdish? That's because the Hegdish can come automatically when the name is Yotze Asiri, similar to Meiser. But in any event, since I can't take off the Meiser, therefore I can't make the day of the Geir and the day that I'm unable to be Meisering. That would be ridiculous. I mean, so what am I to Stam Asring name of some people? Yev Shal Aser Biyom Tov. Since Elul, which is Somoch L'Tishrei, is always 29 days, so the day before Echad B'Tishrei will be the 29th of Elul. What is this lashon of pros that we said? pros ha-Pesach, pros ha-Atzeret. Amar Rabbi Abahu, always when we use the word pros, we mean split in half. Okay, well, what are we splitting in half over here? That's like we have Kedei Achilat Pras, right? Achilat Pras is half of a kikar. So pros ha-Pesach, what does it mean? Well, it means one half of the din of the 30 days kainam l'regel, when you're darshan on the regel. So that would be 30 days before Pesach. Make it 15 days before Pesach. Make it 15 days before Atzeret, 15 days before Sukkot. And these times as well happen to be the times of the Gronot. Why did we do three times like this? Omer Rabbi Yochanan, mipnei she'im pirkei leida. Look, basically, I mean, there are animals that usually have their period of birth in the earliest stages. It's really pre-spring. I mean, it's the last days of the winter. So like sheep that are born while there's still snow out there, and it's again, as Harriet describes, you know, those chilly days of taking care of all the sheep, and that's a special time. And then there's later animals, the ones that give birth during the actual Aviv, so that's before Shavuos, and the remainder give birth before Sukkot, because essentially we see them as crops. There are three crops. We give them the dinam of crops that we would give to Meiser Dagan. So those are the Pirkei Leida, according to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Acha, Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chiya, B'Shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, and this has got nothing to do with that. It's got to do with the fact that we want a lot of behemoths around before Yom Tov. So since basically people are going to keep their animals until that time that they're going to be able to take off Meiser, so because of that, they waited and they had a lot of animals available 15 days before all the Yom Tovim, which is exactly when people are going to start buying the animals to make sure that they have enough to be able to shecht for Yom Tov. And so because of that, it's the perfectly good time logistically as a connection to the Chag. Rabbi Yudin says, that's not the reason. The reason is, shelo yavo lidei bal ta'acher, because we want you to make sure that you're not supposed to put off being mekayim a mitzvah when you can. So the maaser, you're supposed to bring your maaser immediately. First yontiv is the mitzvah of bringing a carbon. If you chas for shalom, wait three yom tovim, or sukkis according to Amandi Yomar. So then you're going to be over on the Yisur D'oraisa of Baal Ta'acher. So in order that the Meiser takes place right by the time that you'll be going up to the Beis HaMikdash anyway, so because of that, we give you that particular time. That's the reason. Amar Rav Yusa. And that would mean, there's two different ways of learning this. Rav Yusa, maybe some understand that Rav Yusa is disagreeing. And he's asking us a question. That's crazy, says Rabbi Yusuf. What? Kolamasha, Tivlei, Eivra, Babalta Acher. There's no Balta Acher in not taking off the Meiser Behema. There's Balta Acher if you do take off the Meiser Behema, not to bring it. But I mean, you're trying to give me a time in which I'm going to take off the Meiser Behema. That doesn't make sense to make two different steps. You'll say, take off your Meiser Behema now, because that way you'll be able to bring it. But if you didn't take it off now, you wouldn't have had to bring it. So I don't understand what you're saying. That's one way of understanding Rabbi Yusa. The other way of saying understanding Rabbi Yusa is that he's actually saying a halacha based on this. And he's saying a tremendous chiddush, that kol ha-masheti v'lo, that even if you didn't take off the meiser in time to be able to bring it, so mid-rabbanan, you would be over on a bal ta'acher, because ultimately you end up delaying the carbon's coming to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, close in pshat, the tone is very, very different. Now, when it comes to the dinim of aspects that we have in Meiser Behima, the main place, of course, that we had all of those dinim is in Becharos, because you remember that the dinim of Bechoros, the dinim of Meiser Behima is very, very similar. We have Hukshu Meiser Behima to Bechor. So in the Mishnah in Becharos, it says that Rabbi Meir says that be'echad be'elul Rosh Hashanah l'maser behima. Now let's be very clear about one thing. Rosh Hashanah and the Gronos are not really related. Because the idea of Rosh Hashanah is that we learn out from the Pasuk that you have to take each crop separately. And in the same way, you do not take from one year's tour, on another year's tour to take off tumors in misers. Same thing is true of miser. So an animal that it was nola in year one, you cannot mix into the same goren, into the same 10 group of 10 that you would put into the deer. It's called the deer. Ein nichnasim ladir lehitaser with shana achas, with another shana. That's the meaning of Rosh Hashanah. This defines the new year. We don't bring for one year to the next, which is not related to the times that you're supposed to make sure that you take off your Ma'aser Behemah. This defines which 10 Behemahs can go together into the deer. So it's a different halacha. Because we brought up the Din of Koronais, we want to make sure that people understand that that's not the same as the Din of Rosh Hashanah. And so we speak out the Mishnah in Becheres and we clarify the difference between them. So Rabbi Meir says, the time that defines the new year, which you cannot mix animals born one year from the next, to put them together in the deer to equal 10, that is the first day of Elul, that is the Rosh Hashanah from Ma'aser Behemah. So there the Gemara, remember, also this appears in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, which we're talking about all the various Rosh Hashanim. The Rosh Hashanah, when it comes to Ma'aser Behemah, is on Erev Be'elul. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon Omrim, no, it's actually Be'echad B'Tishrei. And Ben Azai says, well, since we've got two shitas over here, we're going to be Machmir, and the animals born during Elul cannot be Mitztaref with the ones before, because maybe the correct time is that this isn't the beginning of Elul was a new year, but they can't be Mitztaref with the ones after, because maybe the next Be'echad B'Tishrei was the beginning of the year. So because of that, we'll have to take off the Elul animals with themselves. So they're mitasrin b'fnei atzman. Omer Rav Huna, the time of the Rabbi Meir, the reason that Rabbi Meir sees the shana b'shana that the Torah defines as the way in which we're able to be mitzaref animals is simply because ad kan in mitmatzot leleit min hayishanot. Basically, animals, assuming that what we're talking about over here is that we're talking about the new crop of animals, that those are conceived, or those that are conceived before Nisan, which is the way in which the year begins in terms of the animals that are, as we, the Gemara over there, Rosh Hashanah, analyzes from the Pasuk, which we're going to bring briefly here as well. So the time that the older crop of last year's animal that were, they already were conceived before Nisan, which is the beginning of the new year, and these are the last ones that are going to be born. So by the first of Elul, you've got all of them born from the ones that had been conceived before Nisan. Mikan ve'elech himatchilot le'leid min ha'chadashot. After Rishon Elul, so then you have those that were conceived after the first of Nisan. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Bon says, b'shem Rav Huna, what's this far of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who say that it's Echad B'Tishrei, is they say, and this is the pasuk that is actually, the pasuk itself is analyzed in two different ways with Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, in the Bavli and Rosh Hashanah. But over here, we bring it as the Sfarah of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, because it says in the pasuk, that beautiful pasuk of Lafshu Korim Hatzon Va'amakim Ya'atfu Var Yidro A'u Af Yashiru. So the sheep become covered. Lafshu, they wear their clothing, which means the way he's understanding it, it means that they become pregnant so that they start becoming large with flesh from their pregnancy. Those are the early ones, the Karim. That refers to the ones that were the Bechirot. But then it says, Amakim Ya'atfu Bar. The Lashon of Ya'atfu is a Lashon of Atifot. Remember that we had that in Mitzrayim also. There's the word of actually Yaakov Avinu when he first made the difference between the tzon. So he saw to it that the ones that were very late in getting pregnant, they are called the atufim. It was one approach. Other approach of atufim, they were the ones that you didn't want to get pregnant, so you would put their tails down because they were the lower quality animals and so on. But the atufim went to Lavan. So over there, those were the ones that didn't really mate early on. So that refers to the ones that are giving birth later. Elu ha'afilot, those are the ones that are coming at late times. And that's the time that the amakim, the valley, is covered with bar. Bar is the food. So then that means that they show up at basically Elul time, when now you have the grain that's coming from them. And they, Yitro'a'u. Yitro'a'u means we can be friends with each other. Yitro'a'u, and then they will sing, which could be a remez. They will sing because of the mitzvah, meaning now you'll have 10. Or Yashiru could be a remez to Ya'ashiru. They will make you rich because anybody who takes off Maaser is Mitasher. Or it could be Yashiru, to be pronounced Yit'asru. They should be taken mice or whatever. Everybody has a different chat. But the point is that the singing is an expression of the Yitro'ahu. So both of them can come together to be in the same, as if they are friends, as if they are Re'im. So that means the early animals in Av with the late animals in Elul are all considered to be the same year. Not like Rebbe Meir, in which case, when must the new year really begin? It must be the next month, which is in Tishrei. And now there's also a brisa that explains Ben Azai a little bit better. So Ben Azai, in the Mishnah, he just says Elulim b'fnei atzman. But the brisa explains that Ben Azai spoke out, that Hoel ve'ilu omrim kach, ve'ilu omrim kach. Since we have Rabbi Meir saying it one way, and we've got Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon saying it another way, so you Elulim mitasri b'fnei atzman. Let them all remain separate. So what do I mean? What I mean is, look, if you take three sets of animals, okay, you've got five animals that are born in B'chamisha Ba'av, and then you've got five animals that were born that in Elul, and you've got five animals born in Tishrei, is the correct girsa. So then you cannot combine them because we're not sure whether the Elul ones are combined either with the Tishrei ones or with the Av ones. So we've therefore, what we're going to have to do is not take off Meiser because we don't have 10 animals to take off Meiser from. But if you've got five that were born in Tishrei and five that are born in the following Av, which of course is much further away from each other than just the 30 days, there's a whole year. That doesn't matter. If you have five in Tishrei and five in the next Av, which is a year, 10 months later, basically, then they will be mitztafer, because then they were born together in the same Shnat HaMaaser. Wait a minute. What do you mean Ben Azai says, since these say that and these say that? These were both his Talmidim. How in the world does Ben Azai, who is the Rav of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar, I mean, how in the world is he going around and saying, well, since these say this and these say that, I guess we'll be Suffolk. I mean, how does that make sense, Bichlal? Is he going to be Machriel Divrei Tamidavata? Says Rabbi Yirmiyah and Rabbi Maisha, B'Shem Rishmo, but Rabbi Yitzchak. Listen, the first ones to be chaylik on this was not Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar. This is an old machlokas. Shekein nechliku alea avot ha'olam, the very fathers of the world, Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov, they already had this machlokas. Who do I refer to when I say the avot ha'olam? Tana Rabbi Yona Kamei. The Rabbi Yirmiyah, this was a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. They're like the fathers of the world. You know, so when it comes to that, so Ben Azai can say, you know, that, okay, so we have a big suffix over here. Wait a minute. I mean, wasn't like Ben Azai actually like a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva in a way? I mean, in the beginning, he certainly started learning with Rabbi Akiva. So, like, how does he talk like that? I mean, it must be that Zot Omeret Ben Azai Chaver V'Talmid Hayad Rabbi Akiva. He was never considered to be the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva as a Rabbi Muvak. He started learning by Rabbi Akiva, and then he became very rapidly a Gadol on the same level of Rabbi Akiva. In fact, as Ben Azai expressed elsewhere, remember, Ben Azai says, the whole world is like garlic shells to me. None of them have anything except for this baldy, which Tosfos says was the reference to Rabbi. That's the reference to Rabbi Akiva. That's why we would call Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. The standard name we're going to call Rabbi Akiva, Mr. Baldy. That's outrageous. But anyway, this was how Ben Azai spoke. I mean, if you're going to tell me that Ben Azai was a real Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, not a Talmud Chaver, I mean, did you ever hear anybody speak to his Rebbe this way? Eat Barnash, Amar Rabbi. Well, hold the Elo Merkach, Elo Merkach. I mean, it's outrageous to talk like that. So he must have been a Talmud Chavar. Reb Avin b'shem Reb Shmuel b'Reb Yitzchak says, I have to share other places where you can see that very clearly. Ben Azai says also to Rabbi Akiva, you know, we had enough problem with the original cases. There was a whole bunch of complicated cases over there about a building that collapses on different people and the question of what things would be depending on who died first. We don't know who died first. And so there's a lot of machlokas over there between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And there's three cases. The third case, there was no machlokas. It comes along Rabbi Akiva to say, no, there is a machlokas. And Rabbi Ben Azai's response to that was, you know, we've had bad enough tzaras with the two cases of a machlokas. Now you want to come and make another machlokas? Enough is enough already. Well, we finally had something that we thought Beit Shammai agreed with Beit Hillel, and now Rabbi Akiva is coming along to make us more problems. I mean, could you imagine saying that? And you're coming along to me. What kind of lashon is that? I mean, that's crazy. So Zot Omeret, I see from there that Ben Azai was a chaver and a talmid to Rabbi Akiva, because it's impossible to say Rabbi Akiva was really rabbi. I mean, can you imagine a person telling his rabbi, and you're coming along to make more tzaras over here? He's Farnash. Amar le Rabbi, Ela Shabbat alach lokal eno tashavim. Okay, so clearly this was not based on the machlokas Rabbi Meir with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. It must have been a leftover of the original machlokas Rabbi Akiva with Rabbi Yishmael. Now, in Bechoris, we learned, and this is the difference between the issues of the Rosh Hashanah versus the din of the what we call the Goranot. So, kol ha'noladim yachad b'tishrei ad esrim v'tisha be'elul, any animals born from the first day in Tishrei all the way until the end of the year at the 29th day of Elul, all of those are going to be able to go into the deer, to be mitztarif, to tend. This, of course, is Aliba the Rebbe Elazar. But on the other hand, if you have five animals that are 2 days apart, five animals that were born before Rosh Hashanah, and 5 days that are born after Rosh Hashanah, they cannot be mitztarif. But don't confuse this with the Goren. The Goren has nothing to do with Siruf. The Goren is merely a halacha of when you're mechuyev to take off meiser and can no longer keep your animals around without meiser. So if you've got five that were born before the Goren and five that were born after the Goren, but they're still in the same meiser year, of course, are elu mitztarfim, because the Goren has nothing to do with Siruf. Omer Rabbi Yusa, you know, you could see from the Mishnah that the way that the Chachomim defined the idea of the Goronot means that the idea of the Rosh Hashanah is that lo asuota, you said that it's something like grain meiser, right? Because the same way we don't take off meiser from 1 year's grain with the next, but it is not really the same, because think about it. I mean, when it comes to grain, we go, or depending what it is, grain or if it's fruit. If it's fruit, we'll go according to chanata. So that's when the fruit first appears, before it's ripened. When it comes to grain, we'll go according to shlish. Once it was gadol shlish, then it becomes roy for use, and then that becomes the way in which we define what year it grew in, right? So like when it comes to Tu B'Shvat, like Abit Peretz, it's the chanata. But when it comes to the animals, we do not make that level of comparison, because what we talked about was birth. Now, birth is not chanata. Birth is not shlish. Birth is completely and totally its own shear. So it wasn't like a shlish either. Because if you're going to tell me that they went according to chanata, so then it should go according to recognizable pregnancy, which is the equivalent of chanata and a fruit. So I see the budding of the fruit over here. I see the beginning of the growth of the mammal embryo. So if you're going to tell me it's kechenet, so then what the Mishnah should have said is that not anything that's born from the first of Tishrei to the 29th of Elul, it should have said anything that became pregnant from the Echad B'Tishrei until the 29th of Elul, okay? If you're going to tell me that it's shlish would be the moment that it's actually usable. Is the Meiser usable upon birth? No. Why? Because Shivat Yamim Tiyatachas Imo, Miyom HaShmini V'Ala, Yeratzeh LeKorban, right? So it's not like Shlishi either because it isn't ready to be used. If you're really going to compare it to its usability, then what you should have said, any animals born until the 22nd day of Elul, which means that 7 days later, when now they become roy for the Mizbeach, then it's going to be the 29th of Elul. You didn't say that. Instead, you said if it's literally born on the 29th of Elul, okay, so then that proves that even though you're saying it's similar in some way to the dinim of Meiser of Peres or the Meiser of Dagon, but it isn't really consistent with those type of shiurim. Says Rav Shammai b'shem Rabbi Bon Rav Chiya, I'm not so sure about that. But let's imagine that we do make it kishlish, okay? And I'll prove to you that this is the case. If we made it kishlish, right? So then we could still say that since according to Rabbi Shimon, remember Rabbi Shimon Shita, we've had many times, that a mechuser zman, which is not yet roy to be brought on the Mizbeach, is nonetheless nichnas ladir leitaser. It still is roy to be taken meiser from. You'll just wait the requisite time to put it on the Mizbeach. So then if that's the case, it would be like Shlish because it's perfectly usable because it's not really considered to be a problematic mechuser zman. It's a mechuser zman, so you wait a couple of days. But the point is, I'm ready to deal with it as an animal in my flock, right? Let's say Rabbi Shimon. Now, the question is, come Rabbi Manim, Rabbi Shammai. So Rabbi Manim got up to attack him on this. I mean, he said to him, Amarle, did you say that? You say that? And it should say here, we should put in the words, Amarlein. Yes, I did say that. You got something to say about it? So he said, but Tamanta Ninan, excuse me, but the Mishnah there in Bechara said that Ben Azai Omer, Eluliyim Itasrim La'atzman. Didn't it say that? Okay, so what is he referring to? He is saying, even if it was Nolad till the 29th of Elul, correct? Now, let me ask you something. Ben Azai is coming over here to deal with the question of when the Rosh Hashanah is. Are you trying to tell me that Ben Azai would bedafka go out of his way to say that the halacha, I'm going to pass him like Rabbi Shimon and go against the rabbi for some reason? Does this make sense to you? I mean, why? You're telling me our Mishnah goes like Rabbi Shimon. Fine, maybe. I don't know. But are you going to say that Ben Azai, when he paskin, he went out of his way to paskin against the rabbim like Rabbi Shimon? I mean, this makes sense. Why would he do that? I mean, he's going to get involved in that when he's coming to address the question of whether the Eluliyim are b'fnei Atzmon that he should talk about Neilad. So that can't mean what it's going to mean. What are you going to say over there? Okay. So what you're going to have to say over there, the way Ben Azai was talking. So the same thing you'll say. That obviously, if you don't hold of Rabbi Shimon, so then what's the din going to be if an animal was neilad on the 29th day of Elul? Are you going to be able to put it in the dir lehitaser? It's mechuser zman. No, you will not put it in the dir lehitaser. Okay, so what will you do with it? Will you wait until, what are you going to do? You're going to have to put it together with the others that were born in their same year. That's all that we're saying, right? So in other words, the point is that the ones that were born early, then we leave them and we wait until they're ready a few days later. And then everything from the past year is put in together. We're not going to make a new year because of the fact that they're mechuser zman. We're just going to wait a few days. That's all. So when he said that the Eluliyim may be in a year that ended on the 29th of Elul, he meant exactly that. But he wasn't coming to Paschal like Rabbi Shimon. The same thing you're going to say about the Rabbanan, if Ben Azai held to the Rabbanan, was that obviously there's a way out. The way out is you wait a couple of days, big deal. So if that's the case, you're going to have to say, Kain at Omar al de Ben Azai. So that's how you're going to explain that Ben Azai is telling me, Nichol Agorin Abba, Mitasrin, Mbinei Eluliyim, correct? So then if that's the case, so then it's going to work out according to everybody that way. You can't insist that it's going like Rabbi Shimon to get out of the diak that he was making about it's whether it's kishlish or not kishlish. There's no clear-cut indication from the fact that we use the word of noladin that it means dafka, yes, kishlish or not kishlish. I'm sorry. I'm Rabbi Chiya. Zot Omer, but one thing we do see over here is that if you're ready to view it this way in terms of Maaseh Behemah, then it means that you're ready to view it this way in terms of Bechor, because we always see the two as equivalent. And that means, since there is a special din about a Bechor, and that is you're supposed to be makriv the Bechor betoch shenasa. So you might think that that means a year from the moment that it becomes shana b'shana, a year from the moment that it becomes usable on the Mizbeach. Well, I will tell you, it means exactly the same thing as Bechor, as it means over here. That the yomim, sh'abechor mechuser zman b'hem, those first 7 days are still part of the year, and that only during that year, that's when the Bechor has to, whether it's ready at that point for the next 7 days or not, those 7 days are part of the year. And you've got to bring it as a korban during that year from its birth. Amarimana, you know, you're right, but you don't need to look at the Mishnah for that. I can tell you where my dad learned it from. Rabbi Yonah Abba learned this directly from a pasuk. There's a beautiful diak in a pasuk. It says in the pasuk, Kol ha-bechor asher yivaled ha-zachar takdish. What do you mean takdish? Isn't a bechor kadosh as soon as it's born? So when you say takdish, what does that mean? It means you treat it with that kedusha as a bechor mi sha'at ledato. So that means you have to takdish, you have to take care of it as kodesh as soon as it's born. That's what it means. Takdish means view it as if it had already become kodesh. View it as if it's ready for the mizbeach. And therefore, haketzad, misha'at ledato, atmonelo sha'na. That's gufa, what it's coming to tell me. You have to start counting, meaning takdish, from that first moment. And now we're ready for another brief respite from Richie's chicken soup to bring us directly into the next Mishnah.
Zuk de Helika Mishnah.
Where's the Rebbe when you need him? What's going on over here? He was here before. Maybe the first rendition got rid of him.
Try it again. It just came out minor. What can I say? I mean, it just felt it had to be that way.
We're supposed to be happy during Pesach. You're switching everything into minors. It's not going to help us. Let's try that again, Rich.
Look, the Helika Mishnah.
Okie dokie. You know, we do have Naftali here. He may not have that big fancy a digital kind of tuner, but I'm sure he's got the old fashioned kind. You got
maybe something to blow on? I don't think you can force happiness. It's got to come from inside.
Okay. Thank you, Richie. All right. So now getting back, we started off in the previous Mishnah. We started talking about the Shalosh Pamim B'Shana. Now we got a little bit sidetracked with the Inyonim of Meiser. So now continuing on the story from the first line of the opening Mishnah of the Perek, B'shalosh kupot shalosh shalosh sa'in tormim et halishka. So you will remember that the Trumas halishka, when we first go ahead and we collect the shkolim, they're put into kupot, but they're put into very large kupot, each one of which held teisha sa'. During the three times of the year where we take a truma out of those, we take one smaller kupa of three sa'ah from each one of the nine sa'ah large kupot. So we end up with three smaller kupot, each one of which is shalosh shalosh sa'in, and we take the shkalim out, and they are marked aleph, beit, gimel, so that we know how it is that we originally took them out, because again, in Yonim that have to do with Hegdesh, everything is done with the chashivut of whatever was originally done. The same way, Malin Bekadesh Velo Moridin. If this is the first thing that I took out, then this is the first thing that I'm going to use to buy Korbanos with. It's not just a question of logistics. It's a question of chashivas, in the same way that we know that the Kurashim of the Mishkan were marked in the precise position to be able to be put back into that precise position, and not just generic Kurashim that you put wherever you want. And the same thing is true of these kupot. So according to the way in which we're tearing them, in that order is the way in which we use them for the karbonas. That's why we mark them Aleph Beis Gimel. Next time, what we're going to do is we're going to flip it around, and we're going to start with Beis Gimel Aleph. And the time after that, we're going to go to Gimel Aleph Beis to make sure as well that we're fair after all. I mean, why should one poor Kupa be put into position of being a dunce just because he was once marked with a Gimel? I mean, certainly nowadays we don't allow children to be marked for life, do we? So we got to be fair to these Kupot. Rabbi Shmuel says we did not use Aleph Beis Gimel. We used Greek, Alpha, Beta, Gamma. We're going to be Mizalzu and Loshon HaKodesh to turn the letters of Loshon HaKodesh just into some cheapo numbering system. What is this, Arabic numerals? Use Greek. So they put Alpha, Beta, Gamma on it instead of Aleph Beis Gimel. Now, Ena Toreim Nichnas, we are very worried about the Jewish tendency to find something wrong with anybody who does anything. And therefore, if these poor guys are going to be selected to go into getting the kupot out from the lishka, you know that they are finished for life, right? Because no matter what happens to them, they are going to be blamed. So therefore, we have to make it impossible to blame them. What we'd really like to do is x-ray them publicly when they come out to make sure that they're not carrying anything. But because of the high dosage of x-rays that they would be exposed to, we took an easier approach. And what we did is we said they can't wear anything that could possibly have a shekel in it. So he can't wear a pargut chafut. He can't have a hem. He can't wear shoes. He can't wear sandals. He can't wear tefillin because obviously the guy ripped out the insides of his tefillin to stuff it up with gold. I mean, no question about it. He can't be wearing a kameah for some illness because, look, it doesn't matter what's going to happen with the guy. If the guy gets into trouble at the bank, people will say, aha, he's being punished for stealing from the Beis HaMikdash. If he suddenly gets rich and does not have trouble at the bank, aha, he stole all the money from the Beis HaMikdash. So there's nothing you can do to ever prove your innocence, right? So it's always going to be, so how much did you steal from the Beis HaMikdash today? Go start denying it. So therefore, we have to make it impossible because Shema Yashir, Mitshumat HaLishka Yashir, and it, or vice versa. Maybe you'll get Yani. And there's no choice in this. You can't say the hell with them. You've got to be as clean as a whistle as possible because they're going to blame you for everything. And furthermore, it says, so even if you want to tell me that Moshe Rabbeinu's words to Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven about Vayitem Nikiim, they might have been meant as a good idea. In other words, you're really getting yourself into trouble making this commitment. So you better make darn sure that people are not going to blame you for the rest of your lives. But it's not Mamash Achiev. Therefore, we quote the Pasuk also in Mishle, which is like a tzivoy. See to it that you are Motzechein V'Zechatov Beinei Elohim Ve'Adam. So now, in Masechet Shabbos, remember, we had the idea of Mefanim Afilu Arba V'Chamesh Kupot, was the question of if you've got no room for your guests, you've got no room for the Talmidim, so you're allowed to move away even four or five kupot of things that were blocking in the storeroom or out in the yard to be able to have room for everyone. So Reb Zeira asked over there, he asked Reb Yosha, what is the size? I mean, there's got to be some level of tircha that is usher on Shabbos. Amalei, so Reb Yosha said to him, the meaning of the size is very simple. Why don't we learn out the satum, meaning the unspecified kupot? Let's learn them from where the Mishnah does specify the kupot. The Tanya, b'shalosh kupot, shalosh shalosh sa'in, she'en tisha sa'in. Which over the course, remember, it starts off. We have three kupot of shalosh shalosh sa'in equals 9. Multiply that 3 times a year is 27 sa, which of course equals the full content of the 3 times 9 sa'a kupot that are inside of the lishka. V'katuv aleihem alef beit gimel. And why? Mipnei ma katuv aleihem alef beit gimel? Lomar, to tell the gizbar, mistapek min rishona kodem l'shnia, u'min ha'shnia kodem l'shlishit, that you have to use that money in the correct order. And we'll see later on more details about what the implications and why we do that. And therefore, you see from here that this typical size of a kupa in the Mishnah, shalasari, because that's what it says. There's other cases where we learn out again. And here, naturally, this should have been your daf for the second Seder, but you're a little bit late here. So this tells you how much wine you have to drink at your Seder. So again, on Shabbos, it says, Amotzi yayin kedei mezigas hakos. But how big is a mezigas hakos? So Rabbi Zira sholos Rabbi Yoshia, kamishu and shokos, omar lei, well, learn it out of the arba kosos on Pesach. What a daf. Nilmat satu min ha-meforash, tutoni Rabbi Chia, arba kosot shamlu, a four kosot all together have one revius of yayin ha-italki before it's diluted. So that after you dilute it, you'll have a revius. The same thing is true on Shabbos, is a rova revius, which is enough to create a full revius of properly diluted wine. Om Rabbi Yossi Baravi Mishom Rabbi Yochanan. This idea of taking that out is going alibid Rabbi Yehuda, because it says in the Brice, if you carry out water on Shabbos, the shear is enough to swallow. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's not. Even if there's just enough to put together the medication for an eye treatment, which is kilor, that is a valuable amount of water, and therefore you would be chayav on it. If, however, you're talking about wine, so then kidei gibi'ah, it's enough for a swallow. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no, wine has to be enough for mezigas hakos. So then that means that the Mishnah that we said before, yayin kidei mezigas hakos, is going alibad Rabbi Yehuda. And what if you start off with the ayin that is mazug? How much mazug do you have to take out? That we can learn from this. Because it says if you take out water, it's enough for a swallow. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's enough to make a proper eye treatment, which is kilor. Yayin kidei gimiyah. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's kidei mezigas hakos. So then that means that the amount of wine is basically, if you're carrying out wine that's already diluted, would have to be enough to be a revius, because it's got to be the equivalent of the undiluted that would be enough for revius. And that's the case. And then you always have to have either enough to make the revius or the actual revius, because that's the only shear that we see. By the way, what is the actual size of the arba kosot? Kamish yurim shel kosot. In modern terms, says Rabbi Yavin, it's the tetarton of a revi'in. So it's an additional quarter over the tetarton, which of course means revi'is, but it was a Roman measure. It wasn't the same size as the revi'is. Ma'o lishtotan bekerech echad. Can you drink all of the arba kosos together without making a stop between them? Remember, this was a shaila we had just recently in the Bavli when we were learning Psachim. And we had a machlokas rishonim, whether it means all in one cup, according to Rashi, or whether it means one after the other. Here we're talking about one after the other. Well, since many amar of mana amar of Yosi, halal im shema an bebet haknesset yatsa. So Ramana paskind, going a libra of Yosi, that if you heard halal in shul before the Seder, then you don't have to say halal again during the Seder. So if you don't say halal during the Seder, what are you going to do about the kos on the halal? You're obviously going to be drinking the third kos and the fourth kos one after the other without having the halal to say on it, which would normally have been the hefsek between the two kosos. So you see from there, you don't really need a hefsek between the kosos. So hada amran im shita an bekerach achad yatsa. So you see that even if you drank them all one after the other, and you didn't stop in between them, the Gemara doesn't consider that to be problematic. Okay, can you drink them bepiskan? Can you drink them even if you stop, like zip it, instead of drinking it all down at once? Well, come on. I mean, when they said to drink, did they say to get drunk? No. Where does it ever say that you have to get drunk on Pesach? It's not Purim. So because of that, if you're going to drink them properly, gradually, then you won't get drunk. And remember, the Yerushalmi holds that the whole main problem of not drinking afterwards, as the Rashbam brought back in Pesachim, is that you shouldn't get too high to say the hallel properly. Okay, so then certainly you could drink them slowly. Are you allowed to be yotze with yayin of shvias? Or do we say, it's a very interesting question. I mean, not everybody agrees that this is the pshat, but since it says vaita, says beferish that the tfuat ha'aretz should be for you la'ochla, so it comes out that it's a mitzvah to drink. So if I have a mitzvah to drink the peres of shvias, can I also be yotze? If anyway I had a mitzvah, can I be yotze the arba kosos? Because that's like putting one mitzvah on another mitzvah. Tani Rav Hoshaya, yes. Yotzin b'yayin shel shvias. Another question. Can I use yayin konditin? Yayin konditin, interesting, we had this morning, yayin konditin, about the leftover taste of a highly spiced wine that would be similar to the idea of saying over the Torah of a person even after his death. So what would be about using konditin as your chiyuv? Or do we say that the spice takes away the chashivas of the wine? Midatani bar kapora, konditin kayayin. Since bar kapora says konditin has all of the din of wine, hada amra yotzin b'yayin konditin. Can you be yotze with yayin that was mazug, meaning that you had overly watered wine? Well, since Rabbi Chiya said, arbakos or chamru, you're going to be yotze whether they are absolutely pure wine or whether they're mazug wine. So far, that doesn't prove anything. Because you could say that mazug means correctly mazug, that the 3-to-1 shear. But here it says, ubivache bem tam umara yayin. As long as it's basically not to the extent that it no longer even looks like wine. I mean, that is really watered down wine. So apparently you can be yotze even with overly diluted wine. Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, nonetheless, it's a mitzvah to be yotze with nice dark red wine. Shinema al tere yayin ki yitadam ki yitin bakoseino, which was the pasuk that we brought in the Bavli. Tani, it also says in the Braisa that if you have cooked wine, that's the same thing as having wine that was spiced. And so that seems to be saying that that's true about the arba kosos, but since the next, we're going to see later on that that's not at all the meaning over here. So it could be that it's nogea, the shaila of whether you would be able to say that it's not usur if it's mevushal for yayin nesach. And of course, that is the halacha. Can you use yayin mevushal that was touched by a goy? And he paskins, yes, you can. Because yayin that's mevushal is not in terms of the arbakosas. Yayin mevushal, no self-respecting goy would use to pour out to his avodah zarah. Omer Rabbi Yona, yes. So you could be yotze b'yayin mevushal. Now this is Rabbi Yona l'shitate, because Rabbi Yona, he would be very careful to bedafka use yayin mevushal for his even his arba kosas, because Rabbi Yona, when he would drink the arba kosas at the seder, he had a migraine until shvuas. He could not tolerate wine, so he did whatever he could to bust up the koyach of the wine. That was like taking decaf wine, you know, boiling it up. And he hoped that that would at least ameliorate his horrific symptoms. And so he felt that, yeah, it's a good idea to use yayin mevushal. Anyway, once this matronita, you know, the matronita were basically the Washington society ladies, you know. So they always have a comment and they're running the show. So this matronita sees him And he's like really bright. He's always looking very bright face, like he's looking like one of these guys that are always have alcohol. His cheeks are all red and everything, you know. So she says to him, "Hey, old man, Saba, Saba, I can tell you one thing about you, just looking at you. One of three things. Either you're a drunkard, okay? So other shatri chamra'at, I mean, there's nothing going to make you look like this unless you're drunk or you are rich. And you're rich in a way that you don't have nothing to worry about. So maybe you're somebody who's a malve beribisat. You don't have to work. All you do is collect your income from usury, you know? Or it could be you breed pigs. So Megadol Chazireyat, this is very, very lucrative businesses, but you're obviously one happy old man, aren't you? So he says to you little, we won't say what he said. He said it nicely in the Gemara. Tipach rucha da hiitata. May she drop dead. I don't have any one of those three at all. The reason I shine like that is my chokhma. Ulpanish chiyachli, my Torah is very open to me, and I remember it. Chiktiv chokhmat adam ta'ir panav. And so there's also something that follows this idea that Rabbi Abo once came to Tveria, and Rabbi Yochanan was in Tveria, so his Talmidim, they see that Rabbi Abu is looking really high. So they come and they tell Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Abu came, and he apparently has just discovered, he won the lottery, or he uncovered a hidden treasure. I mean, you can't imagine what he's looking like. He's looking like definitely like he won the lottery. So anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan goes to him and says, obviously, you've got some chiddush. What's your chiddush? So Mayor Isa Chadata Shamata, which condition did you hear that are making you look like this? Rabbi Yochanan immediately chopped that the reason he would be looking like this is not because he won the lottery, it's because he won his kind of lottery, that he understood a new pshat in Torah. Oi, says Rabbi Abu, you have no idea what happened to me. I basically found an old Tosefta. I heard it was there. I never was able to find it. All of those prices were missing, and I discovered it in the Gniza, and I am on a high. Let me tell you. Tosefta Atikta, I found it. Kora Ale Chokmas Odom Ta'ir Panav. So Rabbi Yochanan said, oh, that's what happens to a person that has the values Chokma, and his face lights up. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, there's also other ways that you can find the shear of a revius. The lug, the full lug, is the equivalent of the older tumnata measurement that we used to use for giving out the muraisa, which is the fish salt and fat. So that we used to use in Sipori. And Rabbi Yonah says, I saw that and I remember that. I saw it in Beit Rabbi Yonah. They used to fill it with honey. They didn't use it for fish. That certainly would have smelled up the honey pretty bad. There's another approach, which is that the shear of revius is one half of the shminis tveriani. So the half of the shminis, half of the shminis that they use in Tveria is a revius, but the old one, not the one that they use now. Rabbi Yochanan said, no, the one that we use today is that size. Hadein didenu, that's the same one that we use now. So why do they call it the old one then? Because, I mean, if it was being gained to Avi B'Yom, if it was still at the time of Rabbi Yochanan, it's a weird way to call it the old one if it's the contemporary one. So some say that actually it did become larger than it used to be, and therefore it was not the same shear. And then, so Yistam Rav is the Ira V'Rabta. Others say it used to be smaller, you know, and then it definitely got bigger and then they made it smaller, but they didn't make it exactly the same size. So it's not clear, but I just want to make sure, the Tana wanted to say, I just want to make sure that you should realize that what we have in our times, it's true that there was, I'm not referring to the original change. I'm referring to the change that took place later. In Rabbi Yochanan's day, it's true that they had it, but that's because it was actually the same as ours in the days of Rabbi Yochanan. But originally, it was not the same as ours. So that's where Rabbi Yochanan was saying, look, there were a number of different stages. There was the ancient one. And then there was a period of time for a couple of generations where even though it had been changed, it was no longer the correct size. So they said, if you want to know the correct size, it's the one that used to be like 50 years ago. In the time of Rabbi Yochanan, it was actually the same and they recalibrated it. So what exactly is that shir? Kama hu shiur shokos, Rabbi Yossi b'shem Rabbi Yossi ben Pazi, Rabbi Yossi bar Bibi b'shem Rabbi Shmuel, says, and you remember we did all of this in the Bavli, it's two etzpaot by two etzpaot by one and a half plus a third. So we went through the entire, it's 10.8 cubic etzpaot, which we got out of the whole shir of going through the mikveh. Remember, we started with the mikveh. Okay, gentlemen, thank heavens we don't have to go through all of that again. But but it's just like a cute sugi because I came up with this idea. I've been looking all over. I never found anyone coming up with the idea. First of all, just bichlal. I just want to mention, put in my two cents that in terms of the halakha l'maisa, if you look through every mukar of every practical individual who, I'm talking about all of the poskim, who actually had to be koveya the shir throughout the generations, nobody held with this doubling of the shirim. And the tzlach and the Neida B'Yehuda that we spoke about when we talked about it, I mean, because it's really no gay at Pesach, and it makes Pesach miserable. But those were thoughts. They were not piskei halachas. I mean, neither the Tzlach nor the Noda B'Yehuda is somebody who goes ahead and is viewed as the Pesach halacha. And even the Chazon Ish halacha l'maisa, he said to be semich on Reb Chaim Volozhin. Reb Chaim Volozhin's shir was tiny. Reb Chaim Volozhin actually used to give out a kezias of matzah on Pesach morning so that it could be yotzei the mitzvah of achilas matzah with the grah and so on and so forth. You know how big the kezias of a matzah was that he gave out? He would take a matzah, he would mix it with milk and things, make a nice matzah knedel out of it, and it fit onto one third of a teaspoon. And he said, this is a kezias. And when they asked the Avnei Nezer, so how big is a kezias, Rebbe? So I understand, what's with you guys? You never saw an olive in your life? so much for the shear of the kezias. And for those who also, there was a different changes in the shear of the kezias. There's beferish, many of the priests can talk about. Even if there was, it wouldn't make any difference because the kezias is defined by the kezias that you know, not by other kezias. So the whole thing is baba maises. When it came halacha l'maisa, the shtaipler, he actually would eat for the, you know, the people eat for the afikoman. So he showed someone what he used to eat for the afikoman. He said, my afikoman fits on the palm of my hand, not including the fingers. That's the chumrah that I have for the shear of the kezias of the afikoman. The Chazon Ish said, in a very simple shear, you're already kelel more than all of the poskim. There was no need to eat two kezaisim. Whoever heard of such a thing, the way that he said it in Yiddish, the bir halacha is given gerecht. Bir halacha left it with a tzarech ian. How in the world does the Shulchan Aruch say you're supposed to eat two kezaisim? Who ever heard of such a thing, or where does it come from? And the Chazon Ish said, absolutely, it makes no sense. All that it means is if you're going to eat separately from the kezias of the one matzah and kezias of the other matzah, meaning from the motzi and the matzah, you should put them together to have one kezias. It doesn't mean you need to have one kezias of each one. It means your kezias should consist of each one, which is certainly not negay the people at the Seder because they're not eating either of them. You're giving them out matzahs from other matzahs. So the whole thing, again, is a baba maisa. The way that the Chazon Ish measured the actual shear of the matzah is, as I told you, that it goes according to the specific density of matzah. It is not a weight. It's a specific density of displacement of water of the size of a keziah's, in which case the correct shear for the matzahs that we give out, that we used to bake, remember, Richie, our matzahs, the correct shear of a keziah's is 1/6 of a matzah, is a large keziah's. So that would be perfectly okay to eat. So, you know, it's good business for the matzah manufacturers, but none of the gedolim would have those sizes. Same thing about the revias, the shear. I mean, I have my grandfather's kos, and it's certainly nowhere near a chazon ish shear. And the size of the shearim that they give over from Reb Chaim Volozhiner and from all of the very old kosos that were much smaller than that, basically relying on the Rambam shear of 75 milliliters. 75 milliliters is so incredibly tiny that if you take one of those plastic cups, the bottom third of the cup is already 75 milliliters. So, I mean, that's the kind of shiurim that you're talking about. And people do not have to come out of the Seder sick to their stomach. And when it came to maror, the Chazon Ish also, we have like this tiny amount of maror that was the size of a typical olive when you squeezed it together. And then that's all. Whoever heard of such things? To take on the drabonon with double shiurim and nichbo abeitzim, and it's just beyond belief. So, and there was no one, but no one responsible in any of the previous dairies who ever gave over such things. There was even a maisa. Who was it said by? One of the daily, it was the Netziv, actually. It was the Netziv. So the Netziv, there's a letter from the Netziv to his son. So he says, you know, I know that you're like a tremendous rav, but I cannot understand these rumors that I heard about what you're saying is the size of the maror that you eat. You eat maror and you get sick from eating maror. Do you know what my rabbein ate for the size of maror? You could barely see how much they were eating. I don't understand what you're being machmer on. Where do you get such crazy shirim from? And why would you be machmer on a drabonon and so on and so forth? So, you know, apparently the issue started a while ago, but it sure doesn't have good pedigrees. So.
Rabbi?
Yeah, Rich.
Why was this shear not given over before Pesach?
It wouldn't have been appreciated before Pesach. Now it's appreciated. We did give over some of it before Pesach. Anyway, so as I was telling you, I came up with a brilliant way of proving the breakdown of this, turning the etzpaot into the double because of the beitzim, instead of vice versa, recognizing that you've doubled the beitzim because you added a little tiny bit to the etzpa and then cubed it, which made it 100% larger, which is just the mathematics of it, you know. So all you need to do is just add that little extra to your etzpa measurement. And if you're off on that, you double the size. But anyways, I came up with this brilliant idea because the Rambam relates the coinage to the original dirham coin and to the number of seorim, as the Gemara does, which is the ancient measurement of silver. So grains are still called grains of silver. And in doing that, we have a very good measurement of the shear of mona shel hegdash of 3,000 shekel. You say, what good is that? I'll tell you exactly what good it is, because we also know the specific density of silver. So we know precisely how much silver would be used to fill the exact measurement of the bottom of a keresh, which would fit into the aden, after you removed 1/3 on either side of the shlavim. You could figure out precisely how many cubic etzpaot of silver could fit in there of that weight. And the Torah says there was nothing left over. So if you can't fit in 3,000 mana, then you know you've got the wrong measurement, right? So, okay, so there you have a direct correlation. Now you just need to do the math. But it works out to something between 50 and 60 kilo of pure silver. So anyway, go ahead and work it out.